Not many of you should become teachers, my brothers and sisters. It's like the worst possible message for the start of a new year in church school. We are always looking for new teachers, for people who have gifts of sharing faith with children and young people. And many who would be great teachers worry that they're not qualified enough, right? That they haven't read the Bible enough themselves or enough theology. That's all right, we always tell them. If you love God and you enjoy spending time with kids, you can learn and discover the stories of our faith and the Bible together. Sure, you can be a teacher, we say. And then along comes James. Not many of you should become teachers, my brothers and sisters, for you know that we who teach will be judged with greater strictness. This is no help in our recruiting efforts. Thanks a lot, James. Our reading from the letter of James starts in that cheery way today, and it doesn't get much rosier after that. Wild animals can be tamed, the letter goes on to say, but no one has succeeded in taming the tongue. It's a restless evil, full of deadly poison. The reading is basically an extended meditation on the tongue, on human speaking. And I don't know if this particular passage is familiar to you, but I imagine the general theme here is the way we speak matters. The tongue can do a lot of damage. That's a pretty straightforward message, and really you don't need to go to church to hear that. You probably heard it growing up plenty from one adult after another, telling you to be polite, to speak kindly to others, to mind your manners. I'm sure you can think of lots of examples where words have been used in hurtful ways. In the news, in your own presence, in your own life. So it's a familiar sort of message in lots of ways. And because of that, there's sort of a peril in reading a passage of the Bible like this that zeroes in on a concrete action like speaking. To begin with, I think there's sort of the peril of trivializing or domesticating the message. A few years ago, a cafe in Nice, France, put up a sign with a revised price list for coffee. Café, 7 euros. Café, s'il vous plaît, 3 euros. Bonjour, un café, s'il vous plaît, 1.5 euros. The sign and the cafe made a viral blip on the internet. The owner said he'd gotten tired of people coming in and being rude with their orders, and he was ready to try something different to get people's attention. Lots of people liked this sort of simple plea for politeness, and the cafe saw a big spike in business. Of course, being polite and speaking kindly is a good thing. But James has to be talking about something bigger and wilder than that. For James, the tongue isn't just lazy or rude. It's fire. It's poison. It's a well bubbling up water that no one can drink. He is certainly talking about more than just remembering to say please and thank you. Another peril here, I think, is that we only hear criticism of others, that we imagine the text is pointing a finger at anyone other than us. It's easy to do that, after all. We all know, for example, that the way a person in a position of authority uses language has a profound influence on the way others use it. When leaders group together whole populations with sweeping generalizations and glib dismissals, others are bound to follow that. It's like taking a match to the tinder on the forest floor. We've seen it happen all through history. We can see it happening in lots of places around the world today. Well, I'm not starting fires like that with my tongue, we might say. I certainly don't have that kind of power or influence. So all this cautionary business can't really be for me. But James certainly doesn't mean to exempt us from his warning. He uses we language here, making it clear that this business about the dangers of speech applies to each of us here just as much to all those as to all those powerful and exalted others out there. Words matter. Our words matter. And part of the reason they matter for James has to do with integrity. If you've read this letter before, you know that James has a particular concern when it comes to faith and actions, or faith and works. It seems that at least some people in his audience have the idea that if you believe the right things, what you do doesn't much matter. Faith is so central that our actions are almost irrelevant. And for James, this is pure hypocrisy. You believe that God is one, you do well, he says, with just a hint of sarcasm. Even the demons believe. Real belief, real faith, according to this writer, will not just sit back and believe. It will take the shape of faithful and compassionate action. If a brother lacks daily food and one of you says to him, "Go in peace, keep warm, and eat your fill," and yet you do not supply their bodily needs, what is the good of that? So faith by itself, if it has no works, is dead. That same concern for integrity, for faith and action that line up with one another, is right there in our reading today, in the way James writes about human speech. Here's what he says. "With the tongue we bless the Lord and Father, and with it we curse those who are made in the image of God. From the same mouth come blessing and cursing. My brothers and sisters, this ought not to be so." Our speaking should line up with our believing, James says. And if we believe in a God who blesses the world, who creates in love, and who fills this place with people who are created in God's own image, then our speaking should reflect that. The way that we address others, the way we use language, ought to be in line with what we believe to be most deeply true. Maybe here's another way to say that. Our words create worlds. So what world are yours helping to create? I once heard Archbishop Desmond Tutu speak about his first parish as a young Anglican priest. This was, of course, during the apartheid era in South Africa, and his congregation was made up of mostly working-class native Africans. Many of them worked as household help in wealthy white homes, and at that time, Tutu says, native Africans were not called by their given names in these households. The women were all called Annie, and the men were all called Boy. Tutu could see how demeaning this language was, how it served to create and perpetuate a world of discrimination, how profoundly it belittled his parishioners. And so he gave them new language. "When someone asks you who you are," he said to them, "stand up tall and say, 'I am a bearer of God.'" That's what words are meant to do at their best, right? To lift up, to bless, to invoke wonder, and to recall the goodness of each life. Words are no small things. They can create worlds for us and for others to live in. We probably don't always realize it, but we each wield immense power with what we say and with what we don't say. If anything, I think James wants us to become aware of that fact. The trouble, of course, is, as James says so clearly, all of us make many mistakes. All of us use words in hurtful and harmful ways sometimes, in ways that are thoughtless, or selfish, or prejudiced, or dismissive, or simply inattentive to the wonder of the people around us, each of whom is made in the likeness and image of God. So I don't know about you, but I was sort of hoping that James would give us a solution to this problem, that after all his convincing words about this spring in each of us that can bubble forth both fresh and brackish water, this fire in each of us that can so easily flare up into a blaze, he would give us some suggestion, at least. 5 simple steps for purifying the spring. 2-week course in controlling the fire. He doesn't give us anything like that. But I have a feeling he would agree with the word that the children spoke so clearly to us this morning. Listen. Listen. Listen to the central words of our faith, words like mercy and compassion and justice and grace. Listen to the story of love so great that it came to share our life and even our death. Listen to the words that remind you who you are, one created in God's own image and likeness, one intimately connected to and held in that great love that created and still redeems this world. Listen to these words that have sustained the weary for generation after generation. And let them continue to form and shape you. Let them shape the world for you, so that your ways of speaking can help to shape a world of justice and grace for others. No matter what, we will all still make many mistakes. But James invites us into lives of deeper wholeness, where our speaking and our believing go hand in hand, where more and more the way we use our words reflects our belief in a God of blessing and joy. I don't think there's any fast road there, only the slow, faithful work of listening, letting grace form us, and putting one foot in front of the other. So today, listen. Listen to the word that God has spoken, the word that you are loved, that you are known, that you are called. Listen and speak from what you have heard. Amen.